That's right. So, thank you for that endorsement, Tony.
Are you a student here, Tony? UMBC, okay.
So, opening that door, I talked in my closing statement about standing up for the things that I believe in and being willing to take on the toughest issues. And in November of this year, I put out a policy for us to legalize, tax, and regulate marijuana because our marijuana prohibition laws have been an epic failure. They've been enforced with racial bias. While African Americans and whites use marijuana at the exact same frequency, African Americans go to jail 3 times more often for use. They're distracting our law enforcement from focusing on more violent and serious crimes. And when we legalize, tax, and regulate marijuana, we bring from the underground economy into the light of day. It gives us an opportunity to, first of all, keep it out of the hands of young people, because let me also be clear, on a developing mind, this substance still is a bad thing to consume until you're an adult. But we know that for adults, in terms of toxicity, in terms of addiction properties, harm to the body, marijuana is no more harmful than alcohol or tobacco, and it should be taxed and regulated similarly. And when we do, we can generate $160 to $170 million in revenue to pay for other priorities. I've dedicated that funding to pay for my early childhood education priorities. But I came into this legislative session saying, you know, it'll take an election and a mandate from the voters to change old ways of thinking in Annapolis, but we can make progress this year on at least decriminalizing possession so that we stop putting people into jail. We stop spending $280 million on incarceration, detention, and court costs associated with possession. And people said there was no way we were going to get it through. It was even declared dead 2 days before we adjourned. But I came together with a legislative black caucus with a different approach on how we could revive the bill on the floor, and that legislation passed right before we adjourned session. So at least in Maryland, we are now the 18th state to decriminalize possession so that you don't go to jail anymore. But I'm the only candidate in this race that would push us to follow in the footsteps of Colorado and Washington and bring about full legalization, bring that economy into the light of day, and have our economy benefit from the revenue instead of the drug dealers.
Any more questions? Young man in the front row.
Yes.
Heather, you want to repeat his question so
yes,
they can hear?
Yes, and I didn't catch your name. No, your name.
What is your name?
Armand.
Are you a student,
okay.
Armand?
Okay. So the question was about the city jail. And there was an article in the paper when I appeared before the Baltimore Sun Newsmaker Forum. There was a question about this. And my answer is twofold. First, you need to know that my approach in general is that in Maryland, we for too long have had an approach towards mass incarceration. We have had this cradle-to-prison pipeline that suggests that we'll just build the next jail to be ready for the next round of criminals. In 2011, I stood firm to fight against the O'Malley Brown administration's proposal to build a new youth jail in Baltimore City. There were only 40 youth in the system at the time. They wanted to build a 120-bed facility, and we know when we build it, we fill it, at a cost of $70 million. And we know that that money would be better spent in affirmative opportunities like job training and after school for our youth. But we also know that the existing jail is woefully inadequate. It was built more than a century ago, and its decrepit condition is almost inhumane. And while I am not someone that relishes the opportunity to spend $500 million in a future budget to rebuild a brand new jail, I'm also not someone that turns my head to the side and say, even though that doesn't fit with my policy of wanting us to change our approach to mass incarceration, that we shouldn't rebuild the jail. We're going to have to invest resources in rebuilding some version of a facility. But can we be creative in thinking through, can we invest money in rebuilding a facility in different ways that stops thinking about waiting to address reentry issues only as a prisoner is getting ready to return to the community? Reentry starts at entry. And if we stop the revolving door of recidivism, we improve the opportunity of driving down crime in our communities. I want to end mandatory minimum sentences for the same reason. We've been rushing to fill our jails without any thought to what our real underlying policies need to be. And I want to bring those underlying theories and philosophies together with the budget decisions that need to be made on how much money we're investing in these approaches. So I'm trying to find a way that we can address the problems of the inhumane conditions of the jail without continuing to just throw money towards a system that I think has failed us for too long.
Thank you. Your staff is telling me you have someplace else to go, and that I have to let you go. But thank you for being here. We appreciate it.
All right. Well, usually when my staff says it's time to go, I always say, a couple of more, but I'll listen to them tonight. Thank you for the opportunity to answer a few more questions. And I would encourage you to visit the website, Heather Mizeer, MIZEUR.com. You'll find all of our issues. You'll find events around the state where you can come ask more questions in a more informal setting. And I thank you for your interest in the campaign tonight. And definitely tune in. All three of us will finally be on stage together starting May 7th with televised debates. And I encourage you to weigh in at that time, because I think the choice becomes abundantly clear when we're all on stage at the same time, which one of us is ready for governor. And she's going to be happy to serve you. Thank you so much.